Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, listeners. This is Post-Production Jen popping in with a slight content warning this week. Robin Hood is, at its heart, a political movie, and my friends who join me today are political people. So there is some discussion around politics in today's conversation. If you listen to this podcast to take a break from politics and don't want to hear characters from Disney's Robin Hood compared to certain political figures in the United States government, you might want to give this one a skip. That said, though we are leftists at heart, we didn't say anything too harsh. Now, on with the show.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Welcome to another guest episode of Oof, Right in the Childhood. I'm not going to say my other guests aren't special, but this week's guests are probably my most special guests yet. See, usually I have other podcasters or internet personalities that come here to talk about their show and do a little cross promotion. But today I'm talking to my two real life best friends, Melissa and Eli. And I usually let people introduce themselves, and I'm going to let them do that. But first, I want to introduce them to you. First, I met Eli in 2007 when we were both playing World of Warcraft. At the time, I had a four-year-old and he had a toddler, and now my daughter will graduate from high school this year, and we've seen each other through incredibly difficult times. Eli, why don't you say hi to the listeners and tell them about yourself?
Hi, listen. Yeah, he's fantastic. I am professional. The movie we're about to talk about today.
And I met Melissa 5 years ago when our kids attended the same anxiety seminar. We became friends and then found out that she and my husband are loosely related, and so now we're both friends and family. Melissa, why don't you say hi?
Hi, everybody. I'm Melissa. I love Jen more than Eli, I think. Oh, can I say that?
Have a fight. Absolutely, yeah, you can say that.
It's a competition now. No, I love Jen to infinity and beyond, and I am so excited to be here today to talk about one of my favorite movies, Robin Hood. So a little bit about myself. I'm Melissa. I'm Canadian. I love Disney movies and The Simpsons, and I can probably beat you at Mario Kart.
And so what happened was I told them both that I was starting this podcast. And the very first thing Melissa said to me was, are you going to have guests and can I be on Robin Hood? And we will get to why that was. And I was like, of course you can. And then I was talking to Eli and he was like, this is my favorite. Can I come talk? And I was like, hold on. Let me see if I can coordinate the two most these are like some of my most favorite human beings that I'm not married to on earth. So I'm just totally excited that you guys, that the listeners here get to meet them. So I'm going to start off with, what do you remember? What is the earliest memory that you have of this movie? And we'll have Eli go first and then Melissa, and then they can like interrupt each other and talk about stuff.
Yeah. My first, I was at my Kyle, probably. I sat there, you know, sucked into this in rapture.
Now, did it come out that early?
Yeah, it came out in 73.
I see. It came out in 84 on VHS.
Yes. But it was okay. I don't remember where. You know, Disney weird about release. You can watch this. The credits. And so I got sucked into it right away. It was on something. I don't know.
I didn't realize it was the very first Walt Disney classic to come out on VHS.
Did not know
it's that. The very first Disney movie that came out. Like, they released little things like collections of cartoons and stuff, but this was the very first movie that they released on VHS. So what about you, Melissa? Tell us about your earliest memories of Robin Hood, please.
So here we go. Very similar, actually. Sitting on my own brown shag rug in the living room. You know, sitting crisscross applesauce, probably eating Kraft dinner. The CBC in here in Canada would air Disney specials and movies every Sunday night. So I had sat down to eat my dinner and Robin Hood was on, and I was super excited to watch it, and immediately like upon first watching it became one of my favorites and has been for years and years and years. So I was I guess about 7 years old the first time I saw it, and I just remember fondly sitting there and just being completely enraptured by it.
I think it, I was watching it. I'm pretty sure why everyone from like Gen X, early millennials just thinks that foxes are the best things ever. Cause it's just a movie about super sexy foxes the whole way through. I was like, this is why we all find foxes attractive. Every single person from this generation. Everyone.
I mean, they're awesome. Be a fox after what?
They bark when they're domesticated.
Right.
I'm full of weird animal facts all the time.
There's a place I go hiking where I start, and I stop and have lunch in the same spot. Has come and sat across this and watched me 6-7 times. I love it.
Okay. I don't walk 8 miles ever, but now I want to walk 8 miles. Like...
Well, if you come down here, I'll take you to that spot and we'll have lunch with a fox.
Excellent. I will try to not fall in a hole, as I often fall in holes. I am also super clumsy.
Yes.
Yeah. I like Melissa has watched me just like fall for no good reason at all. So what happened? I was like, I don't know. Floor wasn't there when I put my foot down.
I mean, I think we can safely blame your ankle foot.
Yeah, my ankle foot thing. Yay. I mean, heck, you knew me before my ankle foot thing. So before I started falling over all the time. I was actually watching it. I think this is the first time I ever really watched the opening credits, because I know I watched them when I was a kid, but I didn't like read them. And I think that my takeaway was that that Friar Tuck is the nicest badger ever. Like, how did we make him a badger is my question.
I don't know. He's got interesting
form. Boy, does he. How about, do you remember, like, your favorite scene from the movie when you were a kid?
It's a line. Yeah. We're at, actually, I was at Hiss, and that has been a line I have.
That's great.
Be gone, long one. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's just, that's that stuck in my head. Yes, it's at the tournament when he's calling John PJ, and he's sort of hustling Hiss out of there. I guess stuck with me.
I love Little Baloo. He's great. and you can't tell me that that's not, that, like, that's really who that is. That's Little Baloo. What about you, Melissa?
Oh, gosh. I've been thinking about this for a while, trying to find my favorite scene, because there are so many great ones. But my favorite, I think, because I am ever the hopeless romantic, it is after the tournament when Robin looks up into Maid Marian's eyes and she recognizes him. I think that is my favorite scene.
Oh, that scene with, like, when he looks at her and, like, in the forest, and they're just all, like, starry-eyed, and you're like, oh, I want someone to look at me with just, like, a tenth of that. It's the most romantic look of anyone, and, like, that makes my husband sound like he's not romantic, but he is. He's wonderful. It's just, like, cartoon romance is big.
Those giant eyes they had, and you can't duplicate that in real life.
Right, yeah, it looks real weird on humans, like, probably shouldn't. It is definitely, I think, from when I was a kid, My favorite scene was when the kids end up in the courtyard at the very, very beginning.
Yes.
With like the arrow and that's playing great. with Lady Cluck.
Yep.
Yes. Cluck? K.O.
Yeah. Lady Cluck and Maid Marian and like, and I rewatched it this time and it's just like, oh, impertinent children questions. But it was so, I just remember them like playing and having a great time and just that really early entrance into Marian and knowing that she is a good person. Because as a kid, the best way to know if they're a good person is if they're good with kids, right?
Absolutely.
But, and you know, oh, absolutely. But as a little boy, that's because when she and all and his friends go, oh, they're kissing. God, I would have had the same, please leave me alone. I'm going to die in the bushes facial that he made.
I would like to melt into the ground, please. Oh, that little bunny. I call him Little Rabbit the whole way through because I don't think he has a real name.
I don't think he does, but he's adorable.
Little Rabbit. I love him. He's great. And like the birthday farthing scene when I watched it this time, like, oh, my heart was breaking. Like,
when he's
I really
crying.
Understood what the situation was this time, I think.
Right.
Like, it's been a while since I watched this. So like, yeah, when was the last time you watched it before I told you to rewatch it for this?
I don't know. It's probably.
How about you, Melissa? You watched it 3 weeks before you even heard about it, didn't you?
I did.
I feel you.
But before everything was accessible on Disney Plus, the last time I had rewatched it was on my VHS copy of it. So I'm going to say, gosh, when did my VHS player crap out? Like probably 2005. So like it had been a while.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but probably more recently than either of us.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Like, I don't even think I'd shown it to Celestia yet, which is really weird for me because I had her watch a lot of the classics. And this one, I think, like, of the Bronze Era, this is probably top-notch Bronze Era, the happiest story you get for all of them. I mean, well, we just came away from Aristocats, so.
It's funny to mention that because this is right before Disney hit Dark Panda. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. This is probably the pinnacle.
Well, we do have one more happy movie after this, and that's The Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, that's right.
Which I'm going to just fess up to right now. I don't think I've ever actually watched that as a movie. I did not know it was a movie. I've just seen the shorts sparsed out through like Disney Channel free time. So that's going to be interesting to actually watch from beginning to end. But yeah, we get these two really happy movies, and then we're just going to go straight into The Rescuers and the darkness.
So, get the live action stuff. Ooh.
What I found really interesting is do either of you know why Robin is a fox in this?
I thought that I had read that that there was a different fox that they wanted to make a movie about, but Walt vetoed that idea. Is that right?
That's pretty right. Eli, do you know what it is?
No, but I remember hearing that they had another.
Well, okay, so the legends that he wanted to make, so this isn't necessarily him saying no to it. He wanted to make cartoons about Reynard the Fox since like the 1930s. And Reynard is a super dark character in legendary folklore. Basically, he's super tricky and he kills people. And Walt was obsessed with him and wanted to make cartoons about him. And then he thought that kids weren't sophisticated enough to understand that the fox is killing people and it's funny. You know,
right. That's hilarious.
It's hilarious. It's great. I mean, like if you've read the Reynard the Fox stuff or heard it, it's really funny stuff, but it is very like, I think he hangs someone by their own entrails at one point. He's super wonderful. Yeah, like I want you all to imagine, because he wanted that to be his first full-length movie, and I want you both to just imagine, instead of Snow White, us getting a fox that hung someone by their entrails.
Sounds fun. That's
heartwarming,
that's fun.
Family fun. And then they were going to make Chanticleer at the same time they made Sword in the Stone, and the exec said you had to choose one. And so he chose Sword in the Stone and shelved Chanticleer. And then that got made by Don Bluth later. but Reynard was going to be the villain in the Chanticleer movie. And then that got tossed. And then he was going to put it in Treasure Island, which I know, Eli, is another one of your favorites. He was going to put it in short. He was going to put him in shorts of the live action Treasure Island. And that didn't work. And then he died. And they were like, you know what we should do? We should put that fox in something that Walt was already always talking about.
Interesting.
I mean,
it did.
It gave us a great movie.
One of the other funny things I found was that Ken Anderson, who wrote the screenplay, had originally planned to set it in the Deep South to, and I quote, recapture the spirit of Song of the South. Yeah.
Oh. That's.
And the exec were like, England's fine, Ken.
Well, let you have a Southern accent, Ken. That's all you get.
I was like, oh no. No, we can't. No.
No.
Well, I saw it in the jug band when they're having the big dance, like the big dance that they basically reused a whole bunch of people. I was like, that's the Deep South thing that Ken wanted right there, the jug band.
But I...
Well, yeah.
Bring 20
it was kind of funny because that whole scene is just a whole bunch of them being like, I don't want to animate this. Do you want to animate this? No, I don't want to animate this. Let's go find the animation from the Seven Dwarves and Baloo and anywhere else they've danced and just like use that animation and put another character over it. That'll be fine.
I do want to address Robin's attractiveness at some point. I think that that's important.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we are definitely going to talk about that. So I guess since we're still in memories, Melissa, why don't you tell everyone why you wanted to talk about this movie?
So this is kind of embarrassing. Robin Hood was one of my first crushes. He was, you know, he was foxy. I remember playing with some like neighborhood girls, and we were hanging out, and one of them said, let's have imaginary boyfriends, and like the other girls were like, yeah, okay, cool, and I'm like, all right, and like one of them was like, yeah, my boyfriend is the guy from Gem. I can't remember his name, I'm sorry. You know, and my boyfriend is, you know, so and so from, I don't know what was popular at the time, like, I don't know, Knight Rider? I don't know. David Hasselhoff. And I'm like, well, have you seen the Robin Hood cartoon? And like, the girls are like, yeah. And I'm like, so Robin Hood? And they're like, he's a fox. And I'm like, I know. And yeah, he is.
Hell yeah, he is.
So Robin Hood was one of my first crushes, and I definitely think that is partly why I still love the movie as much as I do. I think that it's held up a lot better for me than a lot of the other movies. It has so many less oof moments than a lot of the other Disney movies we've been watching. Robin Hood was one of my first crushes, and so that's why I wanted to be on this one. And you're like, well, okay, he was your first crush, and I'm like, yes, but have you seen my husband? And I wish that I could show a picture of my husband on a podcast, but he is a scruffy ginger British guy, and if you put him side by side with Robin Hood, you might see a few similarities.
Well, when she said that, I immediately thought of Joe, I was like, "Oh, I think I understand now."
Yeah,
but Melissa, please tell them about your other first boyfriend.
My other,
you know,
a certain mystery solving dog.
Uh-huh, a certain mystery-solving dog.
Scooby-Doo was my very first crush. I didn't understand sort of, how can I put this delicately, the mechanics of, you know, being married. And so I thought, well, you know, I just thought being married was just finding someone who you would want to go on adventures and solve mysteries with. And I'm like, well, Scooby-Doo seems perfect for that, and hey, he brings snacks, so I'm sold. So Scooby-Doo was my very first crush.
It should be noted that Melissa also has multiple dogs, so she just has a thing for canids, but she also has several cats. So
I swear everything is platonic.
Everything is platonic, but and I don't mean to embarrass you, but I just, that's one of my favorite things. You said Robin Hood was one of my first crushes, and I was like, I thought Scooby-Doo was one of her first crushes, and I was like, yeah, we're just going to talk about the canid crushes. That'll be great.
I was going to say, it's a really good thing that you cannot see someone blush while doing a podcast, because I'm just like hiding right now.
Don't worry, we can hear it.
Oh, good.
But you're right about this not having a lot of those moments that I was like, why? I think the very first one I had was when they were like, female bandits, ha. And I was like, okay, fine. And then Little Baloo stuffs his bra with gold. And I was like, okay, this is how we're starting.
Yeah, I wrote down the same thing about female bandits, ha. And then the fact, I don't know, the fact that they were being waylaid by some sort of cringy. Yeah,
they say
cringy.
Romani on this podcast. yeah, that whole thing of like tricking Little John by just telling him how wonderful he is while they just pass gold out the back window. And Hiss is over there like, what is wrong with you? I felt real bad for Hiss this time. Like, when I was a kid, I hated him because, you know, we're kind of supposed to. But this time I kind of sat there and was like, oh, he has the worst job in the kingdom.
Hey, well, he's in this weird coat being physically and emotionally abused,
right?
Constantly.
And
poor
then,
guy.
But he also kind of does his own version of like payback when he's like, you broke your mother's mirror. And then like John goes into that like catatonic state where he holds his ear and sucks his thumb. And like, what did his mom do to him? I have questions. I don't
oh my
want
God.
Any of those questions answered, please.
I just pictured it as a Mommy Dearest that moved on.
Right. And it should also be noted that as a child, I did not understand how Prince John was a boy, because he didn't have a mane. And, you know, when you're six, things are very black and white, and boy lions have manes, and he does not have a
no,
mane.
No, that I don't think I had this thing about the gender of John, but it did always stand out to me. Didn't have a mane. But I guess for me, it struck as being less impressive.
I think it's supposed to be a commentary on his manlyhood or his age, because he's the little brother.
Perhaps. You know, the other another little cringe is it seemed like at some point, well, a couple different, they made light of, you know, thing that Hiss hypnotized him and sent him out to go kill, you know, tens of thousands of Muslims.
Right.
And they made light of it.
Yeah.
Not so great.
One of the other like first moments I was like, oh, the Sheriff of Nottingham is a super bad guy. Like, I knew he was a super bad guy, but the very first thing in the movie is him hitting the cast of the blacksmith dog. And I was like,
yes!
That is a broken leg and that hurt. That hurts so bad because I've had a cast.
Right. Too. I've hit a cast and God, it hurts. Your whole body hurts when you do it.
I was talking to Chris about like that conversation about this isn't how taxes work. And he's like, this is how taxes worked back then. And I was like, right. This is pre-Magna Carta.
When we were watching that part of the movie, my wife, Erin, my wife is Erin. And Erin looks at him and she just goes, that's Trump.
We should all be very clear on where we stand politically, and I agree with you.
Since we brought up taxes and now Trump, I also want to touch on Robin Hood being my favorite and why I am probably considered a radical leftist, and why I love Bernie Sanders so much. The mittens, you know, the whole idea of taking from the rich and giving to the poor was it always struck such a chord with me as a child, you know, and that Robin and Little John were clearly the good guys in the movie. And I think that as an adult, I think that that's why that, you know, that seed got planted when I was so young with Robin Hood. And then as I grew up, you know, being Canadian, I think that I'm more drawn to socialism because of our healthcare system and everything. But I think that Disney's Robin Hood sort of was sort of how I started to become a bit more radicalized, in that wild and crazy notion that taxes should be used to help people. But I think the idea of the taxes doing what they're supposed to do and helping out people, especially the less fortunate, I think that that's why that is such an appealing idea to me as an adult. I definitely credit Robin Hood with a lot of my political ideals.
You know, that's actually a really good point.
And it's death to tyrants as he's fighting Cluck. And it stuck with really had and the downtrodden, the rich, and you're absolute. There is a kind of absolute kind of radical. Yes. I know.
Well, and now I'm thinking about it, like my two great loves, the two things that I have podcasts on, because now I actually have a podcast on the other one, is like if I combine the Robin Hood concept with the fact that I've been watching Starfleet since I was six, it completely makes sense that I am a post-capitalist.
Hell yes.
We can have plenty of things without needing to resort to all of this hierarchy of
money.
Like the rich have golden toilets versus the poor being, you know, sick and not having food and things like that. And I was kind of looking at it about how good these people were too. It says a lot about what Robin did for them, because when you look at the scene after he's stolen all of that money, the posters are advertising £1,000 reward. And this is set right in 1189.
At the time looking. Anyway.
Well, I actually, I'm me. I looked it up. I didn't look up the 10,000 ingots, so I missed that. But I looked up the £1,000 reward because the Bank of England has an inflation calendar calculator that goes back to 1207.
Interesting.
What are we talking about?
$3 million USD.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Think about how life-changing that would have been for any one of those peasants.
Right.
And they didn't do it.
It says so much about what they think about him.
They probably all.
Probably.
Well, I mean, who can blame them?
I get it.
$3 million is life changing, like no matter what. But do you really want to get $3 million from the guy who takes your kid's birthday farthing from him for turning in your friend? Yeah. Like there's a moral,
right. Not so much
there. Because like a farthing's like a quarter of a penny.
Right.
You know, I want to have a talk to Joe about how little sense England's money make. Like, it might as well be a nut to galleon ratio thing. I have no idea how England's money worked.
Yeah, it's pretty confusing, actually. Interestingly, you know how I say, like, I'm not very interesting? And I'm not. I'm related to people who are interesting. But my grandmother's family in the UK, actually, they were Quaker bankers, and they sold and merged their bank with the Alexander's Bank, and the Alexander's Bank actually merged with another bank to form Barclays.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool. Yeah. And actually, yep. My grandmother's family's home is actually a boarding school in the UK. I went and visited last time I was there. It's pretty cool. But anyway.
That's ridiculously cool. Like, I'm like, yeah. All the way back to the Quakers. Like, Melissa's family's been leftists from the beginning. Quakers are so cool.
Yeah, they're really fascinating. Actually, that's sort of what sort of jump started my love of genealogy and, history. I'm a history nerd and I won't apologize for it.
Well, you don't have to, because both Eli and I are those people that'll sit around and be like, so in 1734, no.
It was 35. Okay. Come on.
I have to add another interesting tidbit here, but so that same family back in the UK, one of them, distantly related, was the Red Barn murderer.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and so so he was put on trial, and his skin was made into a book about the trial. And for Christmas this year, I actually got a really cool book, and it's called Dark Archives.
His skin was into a book? I'm sorry, I'm still stuck
on his skin was made into a book. And it's actually on...
Is it the Necronomicon?
Have you not seen skin books, Eli? Because you have got to go look up skin books right now.
I mean, I've heard of
them. Oh, they're so cool looking.
I never really thought about any or one person.
Yeah, and it's actually on display in a museum in the UK. And it's one of sort of few confirmed, like...
Skin books.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the word. It's anthropodermic.
Yes.
Books. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna call them skin books.
They are. That is exactly what they are.
If you're like me, you spend a lot of time listening to podcasts. That's right. I don't just host a podcast. I listen to at least 3 episodes a day of my personal favorites. So if you want to do a little good in the world while you listen, you should check out the new Humbly app. Humbly is a podcatcher that inserts a short ad between episodes you were already going to listen to, then donates the money from that ad to causes you choose. For example, when I listen to an ad on Humbly, the money can go to the National Alliance to End Homelessness, Teach for America, and the NAACP. I can even check my stats to see how much I've earned for my causes overall. So, if you're already interested in listening to podcasts, why not listen to them on Humbly and earn a little money for those in need?
Do you love role-playing or tabletop games? Do you love Monster of the Week shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Supernatural? Do you wish you could find a podcast that combines all of those things? Well, look no further. Thornvale is a narrative-driven actual play podcast following 3 monster hunters as they fight to keep a small town in Florida safe from the creatures that threaten it. It's full of action. So do you actually say that?
Yes, I'm actually going to say that. I'll be like, I'll distract him, you get him. And so I'm going to try...
Okay, Bjorn, how are you going to get him? Comedy.
I just got this image in my head, now this is me, not Sammy, of this dragon that was collecting materials for a chicken farm.
And truly awful dice rolls.
Nope, another 3. That's my second 3 in a row.
Oh my gosh.
We're killing this thing.
If that sounds like it's up your alley, then look us up wherever you listen to podcasts.
But we will swing back through. When you watched it this time, since it had been a while, or when you watched it the most recent time, did you see anything that you just didn't remember, or something that like really hit you differently? And Eli, you kind of started talking a little bit about it, about like, oh, female innards, really?
As a kid, I never thought about, and there was the damsel, and obviously Maid Marian, but it's very, and obviously they changed Haver, but it was that trope that stuck out to me. The damsel, it's not evened out or.
How about you, Melissa?
Mine isn't very particularly insightful, but I will say, for me, again, not terribly insightful, pretty superficial here, but it was actually in the scene where Robin and Maid Marian are dancing in the woods and there's all those fireflies. I got the songs mixed up in my head. For some reason, like, I was ready to sing along with So This Is Love, which is actually from Cinderella. Not the song that they danced to in Robin Hood. So that was something that struck me. It was just I was expecting something completely different. And I was like, oh wait, no, wrong movie. Oops. But that was it. Yeah.
They are kind of similar in that scene with the sparkling and the blue. There's a lot of blue. The line from that song that I kind of was like, what? It says something about like you've grown up inside of me, and I was like, pardon? What does that
yeah,
mean?
That, God, I hope it's otherwise.
Ew.
One of the things that I saw that I like, there were a couple of like little things that I just hadn't really put together, but I want to touch on your damsel in distress thing, Eli, because they do turn it on its head, because Lady Cluck is just the bomb. Oh, like when she just tears down all those people with the like the football scene. I was just like, amazing. Okay, look.
I love that.
That's actually in my notes that there's a Kyle fight song, and then she's Newt Rockne on it.
That is a specific college's fight song, and I've already forgotten which one. And it does not matter. But yeah, like the fact that she is actually the one that allows them to escape, because she literally tackles rhinos,
a chicken, like
to get Marion out of there. Like she's so just badass. She's amazing. And so as far as damsels in distress go, like Lady Cluck kind of at least gives that women can be strong too moment. But the saddest moment.
Oh, totally.
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I come with you. And that did. And Cluck.
Yeah, it's true. But at least she did show that she could use a sword in that scene with Little Rabbit.
Totally.
But one of the things that
Skippy,
like, really
you guys, it's Skippy. Skippy, Skippy, Skippy.
You're right.
Skippy, Skippy, you're right. Skippy. Skippy, Skippy. It's Skippy. Skippy. I love you, but it's Skippy.
Hey, Jen, is it Skippy?
I think it might be Skippy. Okay, I will try to remember that Little Rabbit's name is Skippy.
Skippy, gotcha.
I mean, I mess up the names and everything. I referred to Thomas O'Malley as Blue Cat throughout.
Okay,
things, so.
Actually, can I ask a normal question?
Of course.
Is blind as characters?
No, it does not. I am ridiculously good. Back when Ellen's Game of Games, they did one cartoon round, and I got every single one of them right. I am. It's real human faces that are the problem.
Right. Interesting.
I'm very much like Melissa's old dog who doesn't like faces.
It's true.
It's a great story. I got really upset at people that had faces.
But she only had one eye, so it was cool if you were on the no eye side of her. But if your face was on the eye side, she was not happy, and she would try and eat your face.
It's true.
That's fair. That's
fair. But the scene that really like grabbed me by the heart that I watched was the prison scene. They've got like the sick babies eating gruel in the drafty cell, and they're like feeding the blacksmith dog, who I'm sure also has a name that
Otto.
Is
it's Otto. It's Otto.
It's Otto.
Otto.
Okay.
Otto. It's Otto. Okay.
So I've already forgotten Little Rabbit's name now.
Skippy! It's Skippy. His name is Skippy. His name is Skippy.
Okay. So they're feeding like the littlest rabbit that is not Skippy, like the baby rabbit.
Yeah.
And she looks sick, and Otto is sick, and then they have the raccoon chain gang, and I was just like, oh, this is awful. And then at the end, after the bad guys have quote unquote gone to prison, they're breaking rocks, but they're out in the sun in a quarry in a better prison than they put other people in. And I was like, well, the rich people still got the nicer prison. The rich people still got better treatment than the poor people who literally did nothing wrong.
I think, again, it says a lot about the community of people in like the villagers, because even though like they were probably the ones running the prison now, they didn't treat, the bad guys as badly as they treated them.
Well, and it does show that like King Richard was more interested in like true justice than mistreating his brother, even though, you know, Richard like immediately popped right back out and, you know, did some more Jew killing and stuff. sorry, Eli, the truths.
It's okay.
But like, it is problematic still. And it is, it's great that they are wonderful people that gave them a really nice, I guess, sunny rock quarry. Or, I mean, it might be that argument from, say, The Lion King, that when the good ruler comes back, it's not nearly so dreary and terrible because the son came with him, or however that fairy tale trope works. But yeah, the whole scene inside the prison with the townsfolk, just like, it was heartbreaking to look at like how they were being treated, and it made me sad.
It was definitely the hardest scene to watch, for sure.
It was definitely hard to watch, and I agree with you that they're probably the better people, and I mean, fine, if I have to be a better person. I keep saying that. It's like, I'm really tired of being the better person.
It gets exhausting, honestly.
Oh, I was going to ask if, when you watched it this time, if, like, your favorite scene changed in any way. Like, you had a favorite scene when you were a kid, and usually it's things like Maid Marian fighting with the little kids, or, you know, something like that. As an adult, did it change, or is it still just that same feeling on the same scene?
I can say, well, I don't know if this is because, but consuming this eyes of an adult, but I still tend happy mm-hmm. my childhood.
I like that. My answer is very much the same. I felt that it was, you know, when you have those friendships where you don't talk for a really long time and then you meet up again and it's like no time at all had passed between you. That's totally what my rewatch of Robin Hood felt like. It was like coming home to an old friend. It was excellent. And I didn't find that anything had changed other than my misremembering of the song.
You know, that was nominated for an Oscar and then lost to The Way We Were.
Oh, interesting.
So I have to go look it up.
I mean, it should have.
I'm scrolling. Yeah, it was The Way We Were. The one from The Jungle Book lost to the song from Talk with the Animals from Dr. Dolittle, which is hilariously ironic. I love scenes like, and this was nominated for an Oscar, but it didn't win. This was nominated for an Oscar, but it didn't win. Nothing won. It was just, nope. But I also, one of my favorite little tidbits about this, again, talking about how important this movie is to everyone from our era of, like, we're from different quote unquote generations, but our age range, the feeling you get when you see a fox in a feathered hat is very specific for, I think, our age range. But the fun thing I found out was that when they were writing Zootopia and they were trying to make the anti-hero that is now Nick Wilde, it was the director who went, you know, my favorite Disney movie as a kid was Robin Hood, and I would like to bring him back.
Wow.
And that's why we have Nick Wilde in Zootopia.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Zootopolis or something. It's different names in different places. But so do we have any thoughts on Robin Hood that we didn't touch on then? I know you have notes, Eli. Hit us with your notes. We'll discuss them.
Do I ever? Well, I mean, we won't. We don't have that kind of time.
Well, okay. Hit the high points of your notes.
Well, you talked about the opening credits.
Uh-huh.
And the one thing that I noticed is that the opening credits were done very much in the style of a theatrical film at the time, until you get to the point where the cartoon, but it was done with no sound, and then the character name, and then the actor's name, which just stuck out to me. A little odd, because, I mean, obviously, adults are going to watch this with their kids, but kids don't care about that stuff. I found that and another thing that really stuck was watching Sheriff, and I found it super fascinating that the animals that work, they're jackals, and that was just really, really a nice choice.
Well, okay, so again, watching the credits closely for the first time in my life, I did not realize that the Sheriff of Nottingham was a wolf, as a
right.
kid.
Oh.
And so I'm not sure that his deputies were jackals. I thought they were wolves. I thought it was a wolf pack.
You know, I thought they were a wolf pack too. And then when there was a scene when you saw them up close, and maybe it's just mosing my own thoughts onto it, but they looked like jackals to me. It could have been wolves. It could have been a wolf pack. But I was thinking jackals, obviously pack dogs either way. With the buzzards really stuck out to me, especially the ostensibly the citizens.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely and also we talk about wolves are seen as kind of like a negative connotation when you talk about wolves setting upon innocent creatures and whatnot. So it could be jackals, it could be wolves. But yeah, the buzzards, the vultures absolutely say a lot about the Sheriff of Nottingham.
You got vultures building the gallows. How creepy is that? Ooh, we're going to hang the guy and then there's our snack. Ugh.
I did get a little bit mad at Robin. I got real upset in the episode about he had to take those last two bags of gold
Oh, seriously, like, let it go, homie.
Seriously, he can have two bags of gold and you get out scot-free and then none of this happens. See what you did? See what greed does, Robin? Kind of.
But it's also, you know, every caper movie ever that scene.
It's true. I think it's also a bit of commentary, too, on how even the good guys can be tempted, right? Even the good guys can, you know, feel the pull of, you know, the evil that is money, right? So I think that's interesting commentary.
That's a good point. I mean, I looked at it from Jen's perspective.
I mean, if we're really looking at it as the true good-hearted Robin Hood that is portrayed in this Disney movie and not in any of the Robin Hood legends that exist, we can look at it as he sees those two bags of gold as more safety nets for the town.
Yeah.
And if that's our argument, then that's almost a good reason. But a little girl almost died, Robin.
Right?
I mean, like, but a little girl almost died, Robin. I'm such a wonderful and caring person.
I guess the other thing that stuck out to me in this very time specific was that the animals, when they're, you know, like, after the, that humor, so Benny Hill's ridiculous. Mm. But it was so Benny Hill. It was like watching that crap come on a Saturday afternoon and have, you know, my parents laughing.
Why is this funny? Yeah.
They're crazy.
All right. It was missing was Yakety Sax. You're right. Yeah. I was laughing at Hiss being forcibly drunk. like the line of "I don't terrible, drink," yes. And then he's drunk, and I felt a little. Again, I feel real bad for Hiss in this. Like, no, he's not a good guy. Okay, but if I'm going to rank the bad guys in levels of badness, I've got Hiss, and then, like, a mile and a half above John and the Sheriff of Nottingham. Like, I can't even figure out which of those is worse. I think the Sheriff of Nottingham is actually worse than John. John is Trump. Like, he's worthless.
John is
And makes me mad, but he's not actually, you know, good. If he was left to his own devices, nothing evil would happen. Right?
Right.
The Sheriff of Nottingham will straight up make terrible things happen to people. So, but like,
he would have done that without John.
I liken. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, please. You like?
I liken the Sheriff of Nottingham a bit to like Trump's crony Stephen Miller. You know, he's a bad guy, but he enjoys being a bad guy. He enjoys making bad things happen. Right? He likes stirring the pot. That's who I see.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Hiss feels like someone who made a few bad choices and is stuck with it.
Yeah. Kind of.
Like, yes, he could get out, but he's just kind of gotten stuck in this position and doesn't know how to get out because he is miserable.
Well, he deserves to be manipulated in a crusade where, again, he's got hundreds of thousands of people so that he install this in power. And then Hiss realized, I can't control. Basically, Hiss is McConnell.
I was about to say, Hiss is McConnell.
That's an excellent comparison.
So,
he's a bad guy, but he deserves
beginning of this episode that it's super political. Like, if you don't want to listen
everybody.
Politics, don't listen to this episode. I'll just put it at the beginning. It'll be great. But, no, I think it's completely timely because it's not like I've hidden any of my opinions on the current administration. I just haven't been forthright necessarily on the podcast. I've been very forthright on Twitter. But yeah, you're right. Like, but still, and I don't know. I still think he's better than McConnell. Because his hasn't been, quote, in power nearly as long. I was laughing when they were singing the phony King of England, he and the sheriff, because they also clearly hate John, which draws our parallels even better.
So true.
No one likes this guy. He's just in power and we have to deal with it.
Right.
I found out that was actually based on a song written by Rudyard Kipling called The Bastard King of England.
Oh.
So we got good guy Rudyard Kipling in this too.
Yeah, more Kipling. Woo.
Yay.
Just what everybody needs.
That's what everyone needed. More Kipling. I kind of sit around. We were watching something the other day, and they said something about they were talking about literature, and someone said something about Rudyard Kipling, and I was like, oh. And they were like, wait until you hear about Lewis Carroll. And I was like, oh, that's a good one. And Chris was like, I didn't get it. What? And I was like, oh, yeah, Lewis Carroll was totally a pedophile. And he's like, what do you learn on your podcast? And I was like, nothing good. Nothing I have ever researched has made me happy. I just sit around and go, well,
sorry, Chris.
I'm sad now. Everything makes me sad. Know. No, it doesn't. But yeah, we have more high points.
Sorry, Chris. I don't know. I think we've taken the high points and kicked them in the junk. Now,
I'm the worst. The last guest episode was called punching childhoods and taking names. So,
there you go. The only thing that I thought of that we really talk about was John with the thumb sucker.
Oh yeah,
and how people treated him. There was this weird infantilizing of John, but also it was not only on his manliness, but what the writers thought of. And being a child at the time when I first watched it, I didn't get it. But thinking about the fact that this was meant for kind of hate. Actually, I really hate
parts. That's a good point.
Because it's telling you, you know, especially as a little boy, don't be weak. Don't suck your thumb. Don't wish for your mother. Regardless, if you do, spineless man. And, you know, in my own life, I've worked a lot to my father's channel. And I kind of hate it.
Interesting.
That's actually a really good point about, like, the toxic masculinity that's kind of peppered into, especially as we get further and further into this era of films of you have to have a very specific attitude as a man. And that's a really good point.
Well, thank you.
I was just looking, I meant to look up information on their mom because he had such that visceral reaction, borderline Freudian reaction to just even hearing the word mother. And I just had so many questions about like what was going on with that. So that was Eleanor of Aquitaine. And I know absolutely nothing about her except that I've heard her name.
Right.
And she had 8 kids, 5 sons, 3 of whom became kings, and 3 daughters. Like, way to go, Eleanor. And she got an annulment from her first marriage because she didn't produce any heirs, and then got married again and had 8 kids. So
holy moly.
I wonder who was.
That's pretty awesome.
I wonder who might have been the problem there. I'm sure it was her. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Anyway, moving on. I'm so curious about the, because she was the queen regent for John when Richard went off to war. We're going to talk about genomes because I'm confused about things. But like, maybe it's that she was the queen regent and she had recently died and he's still in mourning? Maybe?
Could be.
I don't know. I have questions about why he was so tied up in Eleanor.
It's funny. It's the times with the mommy thing. It's after Sith. Mm-hmm. Did Hiss have mom killed or sent
was
away?
Was Hiss sleeping with mommy?
Oh my god. He's a snake.
Well, she was in the Second Crusade.
She actually
Eleanor of Aquitaine formally took up the cross symbolic of the Second Crusade during a sermon preached by Bernard of Clairvaux. Yeah, she might have been part of the Women's Crusade.
So she went all Queen Calanthe on. Sorry, through what you're
referencing. No, it's totally cool. I'm like scanning this to see if she died, because Richard went to the Third Crusade. I know the
right
weird things.
No, I knew that.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so let's see here.
I'm
reading directly from Wikipedia here.
That's good entertainment.
Like, okay. And thus, perhaps too long after the event to be considered historically accurate, blamed the disaster of many pilgrims being killed by blaming Eleanor and her ladies and the presence of non-combatants. The king, having scorned royal apparel in favor of a simple pilgrim's tunic, escaped notice, unlike his bodyguards, whose skulls were brutally smashed and limbs severed. He reported nimbly and bravely scaled a rock by making use of some tree roots, which God had provided for his safety, and managed to survive the attack. That's Richard the Lionheart, y'all. That is climbing out of the way using roots.
Wait, way to go, man.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I'm still trying to figure out if she oh, and then she got married again. Cool. Yeah, I have no idea. I think she actually came back from the crusade. I think she went with Richard.
Interesting.
She went to the crusades with Richard, and John feels like he's been abandoned by his mummy.
Aww.
You know, poor buddy.
I feel bad for him. A little bit. I mean, not really, but...
Yeah, she went on the second crusade. I guess she went on the second crusade with her husband and then maybe died. I don't know. Or he died. I'm not very clear. And then Richard went on the third. So, like, mom's not home. John is not dealing with it well. And if we're looking at, like, eras, so John would have taken 11, 8, I have no idea. I'm out. I don't know. It's interesting to look at.
But it was, I mean, it just caught my attention. And then
Yeah. And it was like his was always saying something about mother, but no one ever actually brought up his mom except for his, which I wondered if he was doing it to hurt him, kind of, because it seemed to hurt him.
It seemed like it.
Now I'm unhappy with my answers that I have been given. So now I'm on the Disney Wiki.
There you go.
Because it'll see here. Owing a love-hate relationship with his deceased mother, he cries out in agony whenever he insults his memory, her memory. He has a very bad habit of sucking his thumb intensely at the most inappropriate times, making him appear childish and immature, but also making him a tragic character because of his flaws. I'm gonna disagree with you, Disney Fandom Wiki. But yeah, it's his mom's dead. They didn't get along very well. It is heavily implied that his more negative character was the result of his mother neglecting him in favor of his eldest brother, Richard, leading him to a bitterly state that his mother loved Richard best. So yeah, he's just mad.
Pushing a button.
Yeah.
I mean,
John,
not Richard.
Richard asked for it too, but okay. So we're going to talk science because we absolutely need to talk about genetics when it comes to Disney movies, because I have questions. At one point, Maid Marian refers to King Richard as her uncle.
Right.
I have questions. How? Okay, but she's a fox. Like, they're not even in the same general tree.
Oh my God, I'm just getting that now. I'm like, why can't you understand that that's her uncle? But oh my God. I just realized that they are not the same species. They're just now.
Right, they're not even in the
same tree. Like he's a lion and she's a fox, and that like he's a cat and she is a dog. Like I have questions.
They don't even.
Jen, I have your answer.
He was a panther and he was a lion. Okay, tell me.
Okay, Disney? Think of your husband and me.
Oh well, maybe.
Okay, let's just pretend for a sec. I am a fox, right? Mm-hmm. And my fox aunt marries a lion, right?
Okay.
And that lion, right, maybe already has a baby from their first marriage, but then that lion would be like how Chris and I are cousins.
Okay.
So to clarify for anyone who doesn't already know us, Melissa's aunt married my husband's uncle, which we lovingly refer to them as semi cousins. They're not at all related, but they are.
Cousins-in-law.
Like Chris and I grew up just assuming we were cousins, right? Like we shared an uncle, but we're not like we're in no way like blood related.
But okay, so. And I get that. Like, if it was your cousin, Richard,
sure, I'd be like, okay. Sure.
Totally. I get it. We're fine. It's when I'm like, okay, all of Richard's siblings are also going to be lions. Fair. Which of his siblings produced a fox as his niece? How did that happen?
I don't know. What does Wikipedia say?
It does not. I don't have that one. Like, it is one of those things that I was sitting there and I'd never really thought about, or I didn't remember, I guess, that Marion was the niece of John and Richard. And now that I know that they had, you know, six other siblings, it makes a lot more sense. Because at first I was like, wait, is she John's daughter? I don't. But I guess there are several siblings in that family, and that helps. But they said your uncle Richard will have an outlaw for an in-law, and I was like, wait, what? Did she? What? So I mean, that was all
interesting.
Okay, speaking of Richard, I didn't look at the credits at the end, but Richard also, it sounded yes. like it. Is that yes. the same voice actor who did both? Yes? Okay. That makes... Okay.
Oh, who did both John and Richard?
And Richard, yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of the fun things
I noticed
keep getting,
this
like,
time...
You noticed it?
Yeah. I just noticed this time that there was something I hadn't picked up on before.
Disney was like, we are not paying someone to speak two lines at all. No.
Right.
But I keep laughing because we are now in the age of Disney where they just keep rehiring people, and Winnie the Pooh Mouse shows up several times. And I'm like,
right.
We haven't even gotten to Winnie the Pooh, but I keep hearing Winnie the Pooh in all of these movies. And we have Baloo, who's in like five movies in a row. And like, you can't tell me that Little John isn't just Baloo in brown fur. And a hat.
I've got a meme for that, Jen. I've got a meme for that. I do. Yeah. It's, did you?
Lisa has a meme for everything.
It's true. Did you guys ever watch Quantum Leap when you're kids? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
So it's like, Dr. Baloo, you know, is traveling and one day he'll be able to return home, and it's just pictures of like, various like obvious Baloos, like you know, like it's like Little John, and then like, you know, when he was in Tailspin, and like, yeah, so, yeah. So
I please send me that because I'll dig it up
for you. Yeah, yeah. It's in one of my meme folders.
I mean, now I have Quantum Leap question.
I referenced Quantum Leap during Wonder Woman 84. So,
oh, nice. Yeah.
Nice.
I still haven't seen
like,
that.
We're Quantum Leaping, aren't we? And Chris was like, yeah, I think we are. And then he looks in the mirror and we're like, yep, Quantum Leaping. And that is a non-spoiler line. They Quantum Leap in Wonder Woman 84. That is all.
All right.
You know, it's funny. One thing I thought of just now, animated. And I was trying to think about what my first was, although Jen, you'll find this funny. It was the actress in Grey. And she was pretty and mean.
Yep. That
isn't that like just dead on? Yeah. Nope. She was to the protagonist and beautiful. So I set myself up early, didn't I?
You really did. Like, I don't even remember. Y'all talk about having your first crush, and I'm just like, Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
That was so much later, though. Oh my gosh.
But remember, I'm younger than y'all.
Yeah.
But also, I was easily 10 or 11. I was easily 10 or 11 before I was just like, oh, boys are pretty. I also had a huge crush on Prince William when he was young.
Okay.
Oh my god.
My first crushes were Scooby-Doo. Duke from the Dukes of Hazzard. Han Solo.
He was a human.
Yeah, a Han Solo.
I could have called that.
Yeah, really. And then Robin Hood, of course, and Supergirl. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, the like the original
1984, 1985 Supergirl.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, I loved her, and I didn't know at first because I had no vocabulary for it, but I wasn't sure whether I wanted to fight crime with Supergirl or kiss Supergirl or both, but I knew that there was something there.
I mean, she had amazing eyebrows, and it doesn't matter.
Right? And those boots. I love her boots. Anyway.
Those boots were great.
I loved Wonder Woman's boots. Like, I had a big thing for Linda Carter's boots. But I was actually on the Namely 90s podcast, and we talked about Xena Warrior Princess. And I was like, Xena Warrior Princess was every bisexual teenager's dream. Because you could be just like, yes, I am absolutely interested in a strong female character. And it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that she is wearing a leather swimsuit.
In retrospect, it's funny to me that someone is terrible. His show, something as amazing, and gave
I know,
the
right?
I know, right? I'm so grateful for that. I mean, if he had to do one good thing, I'll take that.
Well, I'll take it. It was fantastic.
Goodness.
And then we get Lucy Lawless.
I just kind of get a starry look and just look off. And like, oh,
I could hear.
Right, so are we going to start a Lucy Lawless podcast soon? Because
I do not have enough time for that, but we will have that conversation later. Maybe the three of us will get to know each other talking about Lucy Lawless. That sounds like an excellent plan. We'll make it for 2022. We'll figure that out.
I'll be around. Sign me up.
Yeah. Maybe we're doing a Lucy Lawless podcast. I don't know. Lucy Lawless, come talk to us. We'll interview you every week.
Stay tuned.
Anyway, you two, thank you so much for taking the time. And like, you always make time for me, but thanks for making time for my listeners to laugh and wonder about the intricacies of Disney. So I really appreciate you two staying up late and hiding from your children, which is what they are both doing to do this podcast.
Any excuse to hide from a toddler is a...
I think Melissa can drink to that.
Hi,
Henry. Can. If you hear this, I love you, buddy. Go back to bed.
Melissa says she turned on Baby Shark and ran away from her two small children.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
It's true.
If you'd like to support the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and review. Even if you don't listen on Apple Podcasts, those ratings and reviews affect almost every other podcatcher. If the app you're using right now has a rating system, please consider rating and reviewing there as well. I also have a Patreon page where you can contribute monetarily to the podcast. For just $1 every month, you get an ad-free version of the regular episodes one day early. And for $5 a month, you get a bonus episode that discusses the history and commentary of other childhood favorites. This month, I'm talking about Ridley Scott's 1985 film Legend, starring Tom Cruise, Tim Curry, and a lot of dark themes. Patrons also get a say in what bonus episodes I'm making for the future, so if you want more of my rabbit hole research, that's the place to go. I also have single bonus episodes available at oofmychildhood.com if you don't want to commit to a monthly subscription. You can also find mugs, aprons, and t-shirts on the website. My theme music was composed and played by Sean Rudolph of Let Music Be. For more information on that studio, you can visit their website at letmusic.be or check the show notes for an easy link. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you come back each week to discuss Disney through modern eyes. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by me. I release a new episode every Monday through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many, many other podcatchers. So until next time, keep the magic alive.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.